Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to my Blog Talk Radio show, Love Your Music. I'm Margot Joy Denader, and I'm broadcasting from Marin County, California. I am happy to have Callie Gilbert as my guest for today's show. Callie Gilbert is a number one international best-selling author, award-winning photographer, and social entrepreneur. As the creator of the It's Simply book series, Callie has published several best-selling books of her own and now serves other writers through her company, Serendipity Publishing House. Callie also supports women in transition as an inspirational speaker and now looks to share her message on the big screen with her film projects. Callie splits her time between Santa Monica and Coronado Island, California. Join us for a conversation about Callie's book, It's Simply Serendipity, and the new inspiring sequel to it, which is titled Pearl. Welcome, Callie.
Thank you so much for having me, Margot.
Oh, you're welcome. It's such a pleasure to have you on the show. You are such a fantastic example of what it means to live your music, because you're doing what you feel called to do, and that's exactly what I mean by live your music. It's funny because some people get it right away when I say that, and some people are, well, I don't do music. and because we happen to like music, sometimes they think I mean just music, but it can be several things. And
Absolutely.
Now, I wanted to mention right away that I just love your book, Pearl. And I read the whole thing. I read the whole thing on Saturday. I was going to start reading it and just, you know, read parts of it at least to do the interview. I picked it up. It was a rainy day. I was lying down in the bed and I thought, you know, I'll just read a little while. And next thing I knew, I finished the whole thing and I just love it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh my gosh, your honesty and how you use what happened to you to help show other people what's possible when you change how you look at things is just incredible. And it's even given me a whole new outlook on what it means to live in Marin County, what it's like to have lived in Sausalito. We still have a houseboat in Sausalito that we have as an office. And I just, you know, I can't tell you how much I appreciated you writing that book. And now I'm so curious to read the first one, since this one was a sequel to the first one. I'm going to be reading them out of order. But I really, really liked it. And I just thank you for writing it.
Yeah, I'm so glad to hear. I mean, and that was the thing. I really set out to write both Serendipity and Pearl in a way that could be read in one sitting. You know, I like short books. I like to be able to you know, start a book, and if it really grabs me, to just keep going. And that's what I wanted with, you know, that was really my intention with those books. And, mm-hmm. yeah, it was quite a journey. I mean, it's amazing.
Oh, your journey.
Really,
it's
to look back
so
on it.
Amazing. Like I said, I can't wait to read the first one and find out about that. But anyway, so you lived here in Marin County, excuse me, in Sausalito. What brought you to the Bay Area, and how did you like living in Sausalito?
Yeah, so it was love. I was one of those left my heart in San Francisco. And I had been working in New York, basically my dream job. I was the director of special events with Boys and Girls Clubs in New York, and I loved working with the nonprofit sector, but my heart was in the Bay Area. And so I gave up this amazing job and said, you know, I'm going to pack it all in and head west. And of course, everyone thought I was totally nuts, and because I had what many would consider the ideal life. And I did it, and it was complete leap of faith. I had no idea what would, you know, lie ahead. It was right in the beginning of 2002, so it was quite a journey that really spanned about 6 years. I was going back and forth between Sausalito and the Bay Area in New York. And then finally in 2008, I made the permanent move and thought that everything was going to be okay. I had applied to join Boys and Girls Clubs in San Francisco. It was easy transition. And all of a sudden, it was the heart of the recession. then everything changed. The job no longer existed because of budget cuts. The apartment that I'd found, I couldn't find anything in Sausalito to begin with. And so I found something in Daly City, actually, and which I was happy about. I ended up getting a scholarship to the University of San Francisco, so I figured, okay, let's do that. And literally things began to fall apart, but ultimately led me to Sausalito, which was where really my journey began as an artist.
Hmm. Interesting. So what year was it that you actually started living in Sausalito then?
2008. Yeah,
okay.
Full time. Yeah. I came in 2002 and then was going back and forth, and then 2008 is when I finally put down the permanent route.
I see. Now, your first book is about the major life experience that you had in 2011. Do you want to tell our listeners a little bit about what happened?
Sure. Yeah, so I had received a scholarship to USF. I graduated at the end of 2010 with a master's degree, and I thought, all right, I'm set. I have 3 college degrees. I have this massive network, 20 years of event management experience. I can basically write my own ticket to success is what I thought. And because we were right in the heart of the recession, I couldn't find a job. I was deemed overqualified for everything that I applied for. No one really wanted to give me an opportunity because they were afraid I was going to take their jobs, which at that point, I'm like, I just need to pay the rent, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I really
yeah.
don't care what I do. And
yeah.
So after about a year of looking for work and nothing happening, everything just fell apart. At the beginning of 2011, actually, what I didn't realize when I graduated from USF at the end of 2010 was that I was also pregnant. And
oh.
I lost the child at the beginning of 2011. And that
mm-hmm.
basically sent me on a downward spiral. I didn't really cope with it. I just kind of dove into other things and didn't really grieve properly. And so I ended up losing, my money ran out basically. My car died, the child left me. And at the end of 2011, I lost my home. So it was basically 2011 was just massive, massive loss to where
mm-hmm.
I then began 2012 with a blank slate and a decision of do I give up or do I start over?
Wow. And so the book Pearl starts in, I think it was April or May of 2012. Is that right?
12, yeah. Yeah. So Serendipity basically takes me on that whole journey of 2011 and then
mm-hmm.
ends in the spring of 2012 where Pearl picks it up. Yeah.
Mm. Now, let's see. Your experience from that time then began your fifth book. It's Simply Serendipity, which is the book that we're talking about. And
yes.
So that book covers from what date to what date?
That covers from November of 2010, so right before graduation,
mm-hmm.
to the spring of 2012.
Mm, okay.
So from getting that degree thinking, okay, I'm set, to losing everything and then coming out the other side.
You know, one of the things that really, really amazed me is reading in the foreword and then also in your introduction about how people look at you or me or other people and they don't have a clue what's really going on in their lives. And they think, oh, she's pretty or she's young or she's got this or she's got that or whatever. You know, she lives in Marin County. She must be rich. I remember Craig Ferguson, we used to watch his show. He used to even say things like, oh, you live in Marin? Well, then you must be rich.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sure
absolutely.
There are some people that definitely think that. So tell me a little bit about that, about how that was for you with
yeah, I think what really got me, I remember this instance like it was yesterday. I was walking through Union Square in downtown San Francisco, and there was a man sitting at a bus stop, and he asked me for money. And
mm-hmm.
he said something like, you know, I just want to get something to eat. I don't have a home. And I remember telling him, well, I don't have a home either. And
mm-hmm.
he looked at me, and he's like, but you're so pretty. You know, and it was like at that moment, I'm like, yeah, you know, there's so many people that you just have no clue what they're going through, you know. And, you know, I'd been wearing, like, it was like this, the coat that I had been wearing for like months, you know, because it was the only one I had, you know. And so, yeah, I mean, it was, you really don't, and that's, I think, what Pearl is all about, really, is, you know, getting the, bringing awareness to the fact that homelessness can affect anyone, you know, and that you really just don't know, and to really be kind to anyone, because, you know, you don't know what they're going through. You have no idea what their story is, what their journey is. And so I've had the most fascinating conversations with homeless people in the streets, listening to their stories and where they came from and how they got to be in that position.
Well, and it seems to me after reading Pearl also, I started realizing that homelessness has, there's degrees of it. You know, there's like,
exactly.
Yours wasn't as extreme as some people's because you did have friends that you could stay with, and occasionally, you know, I'll let people read it to find out what happened. But the thing is, though, it reminds me of how people think that just if you look good on the outside, that you're a certain way on the inside. I think that's one of the key points here, because, I mean, even this woman on my life coach page on Facebook, she had posted that she says, you know, your picture doesn't look like your spirit. And I'm thinking, what does that mean? know? And I think, you know, I mean, it sort of seemed like what she was saying was that, well, you seem like you're a lot more spiritual than you look or something, you know. I mean, I don't really know what she was getting at. But the thing is that it's just so ridiculous to judge people by how they appear.
Yeah.
And, exactly. And yet it happens so frequently. It's something that people do so often, and they don't end up getting to know that real person that's inside. And I think that's one of the things that your book, Pearl, and I'm sure the other one too, can help people do, is start realizing, A, that just because somebody looks really successful on Facebook or in real life, it doesn't mean that they don't have any problems or that their life is perfect. And that, you know, maybe they just choose to only focus on the good things and post pictures of the good things. It doesn't mean that they never have any problems.
Absolutely. Yeah, and
yeah.
I think I created a book trailer for Pearl, which got rave reviews, because that's specifically what I wanted to do. I showed photos of people sitting on the streets, but also people, you know, sitting in, you know, airports or on, you know, park benches, who were nicely dressed in suits, and you know, it was like, yeah, but, you know, they don't have a home either, you know. So it was like you said, looks can be deceiving, because you really don't know what's, you know, the story behind them.
Yeah. Well, you know, boy, the time is going by really fast. I knew it would, and I have so many more questions for you. But I want to remind my listeners out there to think about how they would answer the questions. What music do you hear calling you? What do you feel inspired to do? What gives you joy? Are you willing to let go of your limiting beliefs and let yourself live your music? I hope each of you listening will do your best to love yourself, love the people and animals in your life, live your music, and enjoy your time on this beautiful planet we call Earth. Oh, Callie, you know, and it just seems to me that you are such an example of doing that, of enjoying your time here on the planet and helping others to enjoy it also by interacting with them and connecting with them and sharing with them and sharing your story with them.
Well, I think it's important to realize that you can't really, you know, experience what another person has gone through until, you know, you've gone through something similar, you know. And I know that ever since I've gone through, you know, just the child loss, I've been able to, you know, connect with others and really understand, you know, the grief that they're going through and how it does take time, you know, and how you need that support system, you know, and things like that. And I think, you know, I truly believe that, you know, everyone has a story in them, you know, and now I feel so blessed to be able to support other writers and say, let's get your story out into the world And I also hear a lot of authors say, well, there's so many books on this topic, or, you know, why does my story even matter? And I'm like, well, because no one can tell it the way you can, you know, and that's really important.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. You know, and my book, The Art of Living a Life You Love, is a lot longer than yours. It can't be read in one sitting, but it's got 12 chapters, and so I like to, in a lot of ways, I like to think of each one as like a mini book. Like people can just read one chapter at a time, and they don't have to do all the exercises that are in it or whatever. They can just read it straight through, or they can jump around and read whatever chapters. But you know, I mean, when I started to write it, it took me a long time to write it because I actually did write it. I didn't hire somebody to write it. And I went through learning to write as I was doing it. So I know what you're talking about. It's like, yeah, there's so many books out there that are on personal development and creativity and how to love your life and how to love yourself. But this is my story. This is how it worked out for me. And I like you, I'm very honest in the book about what happened and what I learned from the different things and how I started getting to the point where I realized that that, you know, people were judging me for how I looked, being short and blonde and thinking that I was a dumb blonde, and that's not necessarily the case, what people see. And then, but you know, if people start believing what the other people are saying to them, then that can end up creating all kinds of limiting beliefs.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think, too, it's important to realize, I mean, another message through Pearl was to realize that even though you do create the life of your dreams, which I thought I had back in 2012,
mm-hmm.
that,
mm-hmm.
you know, fears and limiting beliefs just don't magically disappear. You
right.
know? I mean, I call it constant transformation, constant growth, you know. It's like
right.
Pearl is about, you know, really peeling away those layers of the programming, you know, and getting through, you know, and moving forward in life, knowing that, you know, these are things that you grew up with, but they're not something that you need to stick around, you know. And I think that was really what's important and what still is important in my life now is that I'm still growing and I'm still learning, you know, and I love
yeah.
that.
Yeah, me too. I'm a lifelong learner, and I intend to be as long as I'm on this planet and beyond. So,
exactly.
But, yeah, it's funny because I originally wrote, part of why I was inspired to write the book is because I'd always wanted to be happy and spread happiness, and I had my times during my late teens and early 20s where I had lots of depression and frustration with life and things not working out, and so when our son was, just before he was 12, I started taking the writing class and decided I wanted to write about what I had learned that helped me not only create a life I love, but you're right. I mean, you have to keep recreating it because things change in your life.
Absolutely.
And so that then I thought, well, I'll write the book and then I can help people that way. I don't have to go out and talk about it or, you know, work with people one-on-one. And then I realized that becoming a life coach is a way that I can help them get rid of some of those limiting beliefs and be able to live the music that they hear calling in them. So I ended up becoming a life coach, even though that wasn't what I wanted to do originally. So that's one of the things that I do. But I think that, you know, I hope that our listeners listening out there start realizing that to question the beliefs that say in their head, you can't do it, it's too hard, or you're not good enough, or you don't deserve to do this, or what would people think? I mean, you know, you have to get to a point where you don't care what people think.
Absolutely.
So,
heard, you know, that what they say, what other people think is none of your business. It's so true.
I remember Wayne Dyer saying, I think that he had said there was a book called What You Think of Me Is None of My Business, or something like
right.
that.
Right.
Yeah. And he used to say that he was a reverse paranoid, that he knew people were talking about him, but he would imagine they were saying good things.
There you go.
Okay, now, you live in Southern California, and you have for the last 3 years. So what led you to Los Angeles? I know a little bit about that
yeah.
from the book, but I would like you to tell our listeners.
Oh, yeah. It was purely a soul's calling, and it was amazing the way it happened. I had just published Serendipity in September of 2013. I had just wrapped up shooting the America's Cup as a photographer, and I was wiped out, and I didn't have a home. And so I thought, well, you know, my whole world's in storage. And I literally thought I was about to have find an apartment in Sausalito. So I was thrilled. I was like, all right, this is good. We'll move in October 1st. You can stop living out of a suitcase. And literally, like, days before I was to write a check to the landlord, he tells me, I'm sorry, but my current tenant has decided to stay another month. And so, seriously, you know, I was like, okay, well, I am going to take a break and then, you know, really give myself some self-care. I'm going to go to Santa Monica for 2 weeks and sit on the beach, and I'm going to go to San Diego for 2 weeks and sit on the beach, and then I will come back and move into this new apartment in November.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to Santa Monica, and halfway through the trip, I thought, you know what, you know, my, like I said, my whole world's in storage. I'm a writer. I can basically live wherever I want, and I said, I'll just stay. And it was amazing the way it all happened, because I could literally, you know, when I was making the arrangements on my laptop of changing flights and trying to get, you know, things organized, it was that I looked down at my fingers on the keyboard, and it was as if they were typing themselves. I mean, it was truly like a spiritual experience. And I was like, I guess we're doing this, you know. So it really was a soul's calling, but it was definitely the best decision I ever made.
It's funny with soul callings too. It sometimes they just sound really, really crazy to even to you, and probably especially
to
other people.
How many times, yeah, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I said I'll never live in LA, and I remember mentioning that to a woman at one point, and she's like, "Well, you know, the universe doesn't see the negative or hear the negative, so all it heard was live in LA, live in LA."
Oh,
well, that makes
sense.
True. You know? Like, okay.
That is so funny, and it's so true.
Right?
You're right. I mean, people keep wondering, why does the law of attraction not work for me? And they're talking about and thinking about all the things they don't want instead of what they do, not realizing that the universe doesn't hear the don't. You know?
I know. And I laugh at it now. It's so funny, because I remember saying, I'll never live in L.A., and they can't pay me enough to go to Hollywood. And next thing I knew, I mean, like a year ago, I was diving into the film world and at all these Hollywood parties, and I'm like, oh, this is too funny. You know?
Well, you know what's even funnier about it for me is that our son, Xander, lives near Hollywood. He lives in Sherman Oaks, and we've been missing him so much. He has just been such a joy to have in our lives ever since he came into our lives. And the hardest part for us was when he went off to college in 2008, which is sort of when your challenges started. We had to recreate a life we love because we were missing him so much, and trying not to make him feel guilty about the fact that we missed him so much. And so we have thought, you know, a number of times about, well, maybe we'll move down to L.A. or Southern California so that we can be closer to him. And yet, you know, you're right. I mean, we don't really want to move there. We love living here in Marin County. We've got so many people that we know here. I moved here in 78, and I think my husband Dudley moved here in something like 71 or 72. And so, you know, this area is just, the place we've lived the longest and know the most people, and it's closer to Shasta County, where my other parts of my family live, and so on and so forth. But, you know, there's definitely a part of me in my spirit that kind of wants to go down to Southern California, at least for a while. So, you know, I keep hearing that, and I don't know, maybe at some point we will. And parents will go, oh, well, you don't want to move down where your child is, because then you move down there and then they're going to maybe move off somewhere else. And that's totally true.
Sure.
Totally true that they might. But he's in the film business himself. He got a degree from Chapman University in film editing, and so he's working as a film editor on a show for MTV right now. And, you know, you never know. So I've gotten to the point where I'm much more open. I'm thinking, well, you know, if it's meant to be, I'll end up down in Southern California for a while. And if it's not,
you never know. And it's just
staying
it's
here.
To just go with the flow. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I know. It's so funny. I've heard that saying for so many eons and years. And my uncle used to even say it. My uncle Foster used to live in St. San Francisco, and he was always this laid-back kind of cool guy, and he would always go with the flow. And at the time, I thought, what does he mean by that? You know, yeah. I didn't even get what he meant. But you know, it's going with the flow of the stream and enjoying the journey instead of looking at it like, oh my gosh, I've got to paddle upstream to get what I want, you know.
Exactly.
Paddle upstream, you know, or I've got to go downstream, but I've got to paddle really hard because I have to get there really fast. And I love how Abraham Hicks says, you know, that's like if you say, okay, I'm going to go on a vacation, so I'm going to go here and here and here and here and here and here, and then I'm going to come home. Oh, I'm already here. Well, I might as well just stay here.
Right.
But you go for the journey, for the enjoyment, for the people you're going to meet and the places you're going to see and the learning and the joy of the journey. So, you know, I think that to me is one of the messages people, I believe, will get from reading your book, is that they need to enjoy the journey and they need to go with the flow and they need to be able to listen to their heart. And you have to get quiet in order to do that. You can't just be constantly letting all the many distractions there are in life pull you off course.
Exactly. And I think to really pay attention to what comes your way. You know, it's like today, I mean, I was supposed to be going to Santa Monica, and now split my time between Santa Monica and San Diego. And I was just there last week, and I was supposed to go up again in a couple of weeks. And I got a call this afternoon about a film event here on Coronado that they want me to come to. And so I'm like, okay, so we can't go then. And I'm like, instead of going, oh, man, you know, I'm like, that's okay. You know, I know intuitively what I'm supposed to be doing. And so, like, I do it. I go with the flow. I'm like, okay, no worries. We'll go up 2 days later. It's like not the end of the world now when something happens that doesn't go according to plan.
Yeah, because, you know, I mean, we have our plans, and then the universe has its timing and divine timing, and it knows better, and our inner being knows better, I found, than what we can figure out in our logical mind, our head, going, well, you know, but this has to happen then, and this has to happen now, and this has to happen exactly this way, and it just doesn't happen that way. You know, we've only got 2.5 minutes left, and how people can find you by your website at CaliGilbert.com. That's CaliGilbert.com. And I'm going to be sending out my email newsletter this afternoon, and I'll have pictures of you in the book and also how to contact you in the book and links for how they can get your books as well. Oh, Cali, so thank you. I'm so thankful that Marianne Wersig introduced us through Facebook Messenger. And yeah, I know. And if we had not joined West Coast Songwriters, then we wouldn't have met the Wersigs. And, you know, I mean, it's so interesting when you look back on all the different things that have to happen for you to meet certain people and have certain experiences.
Oh, yeah. And that's the thing now. I mean, that's like I've been talking with Marianne and Chris about, you know, I'm now working on, you know, another book and film projects and, you know, looking for music for that. And so it's like, okay, here we go. You know, so it is funny how it all works out.
Well, we've got just over a minute left. Is there one parting thing you want to say to the listeners?
Well, yeah, I think the most important thing that I have found in my journey is that most people give up on their dreams because they don't realize how things are going to happen, you know, how you're going to get from point A to point B. And I think it's important to really realize that you don't need to know how. You really need to just set that intention for what it is that you want. You know, keep the focus on the end results. And then really let go of the attachment to the outcome. You know, things happen in the craziest ways sometimes. And you end up really with much more than you could have ever dreamt of. And I think it's important to just remember that.
Oh, that is perfect. That is so perfect. What a great way to end the show today. Thank you so much for writing your books and for being on my show today. And I'm looking forward to meeting you in person one of these times when we're down in Southern California.
Absolutely.
Well, bye for now, everyone. I am wishing you a life you love and for you to live your music. Bye, Kelly. Thank you again for being on the show. And I hope everybody listens to this over and over and sends it to their friends, the link to their friends.
Thank you so much, Margo.
You're welcome. Bye. Bye, Kelly. Bye, everyone. I'll talk to you later.